Welcome to People Power and Politics, hard talk, riveting interviews, community updates, in-depth analysis. That's People Power and Politics. We tell it to you as it is. No holds barred. You are the people. You have the power. We bring you the politics. To listen to our show, be a guest, or to advertise, visit www.pppradio.nyc. That's www.pppradio.nyc.
A very warm welcome to everyone. Our topic today is gerrymandering, a tool of political manipulation and its impact on communities of color. Our esteemed guest is Jeffrey M. Weiss, who has over 40 years of experience working in redistricting, voting rights, and census law. He is considered a national expert on redistricting and has been included in Roll Call's list of the top 50 Washington policy insiders. Mr. Weiss has assisted many state legislative leaders, members of Congress, and other state and local government officials on redistricting and voting rights matters across the nation. In New York, he serves as a longtime counsel to the New York State Legislature and has assisted in all congressional and state legislative redistricting processes since the 1980 cycle. In New York City, he served as a counsel to the post-2000 and 2010 City Council Redistricting Commissions. Welcome, sir. Good to have you here with us.
A pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. So, can you define gerrymandering and redistricting? How are they utilized and how do these practices affect fairness and representation within electoral processes?
Well, let me expand that to also include reapportionment, because that's a phrase that is often confused with redistricting, and I'll get to gerrymandering too. Reapportionment is the reallocation of the 435 congressional districts among the 50 states based on the decennial census. It's a very ministerial process. There's a federal law formula in place that merely by algorithm assigns the 435 districts to the 50 states. That's called reapportionment. Redistricting is the actual line drawing of the district boundaries within a state or within a city establish the new boundaries. And gerrymandering, often pronounced gerrymandering, is the process where the lines are drawn to favor or disfavor a political party or a particular candidate, basically to entrench or strengthen the majority party in charge of the process to the disadvantage of the minority party. So those are the basic definitions.
Thank you so much. So how does gerrymandering distort the fundamental principle of democratic governance by allowing politicians to choose their voters instead of voters choosing their representatives? Thus, it undermines the notion of government by the people, for the people, and perpetuates a system of entrenched political power that is unaccountable to the electorate.
Well, in a sense, your question also more or less answers the question, because when lines are drawn by politicians to benefit themselves, that doesn't help the voters. Now, when you go to vote, you're supposed to vote for the candidate you want to win. But if the politicians who draw the lines draw them in a way that, let's say, creates a supermajority of Democrats for the Democratic Party or Republicans for the Republican Party candidates, that's really the politicians picking their voters, because there's less competition and there's much more of a likelihood that the party drawing the lines will control the outcome of the election.
Okay, so looking at communities of color, how have communities of color been affected by the redistricting process, and what steps can be taken to ensure their inclusion and representation in the decision-making process, particularly considering the historical trend of these communities being targeted and marginalized by entrenched political interests.
Well, usually what happens when districts are drawn is that you're looking to draw the district that will give you or your party or your incumbents or the people that you want to get elected the best chance of winning the election, with particular concern in Black, Hispanic, Asian communities, is how those lines are drawn, where historically minority preferred candidates have not been elected to office. And there are two common practices. One is called packing, the other is called cracking. When you pack minority voters into, let's say, one district, you make a district, oh, let's just say 70, 80, 90% Black, that is called packing. It will ensure that you're going to help the minority community elect its preferred candidate, but you are also eliminating the possibility that minority voters can elect more than one elected official in more than one district. Now, the opposite of that is called cracking, where you have a concentration at whatever percentage of minority voters who are cracked or split amongst various districts. That makes it then impossible for them to elect a preferred candidate. Now, over the years, the law has changed a bit, but using the Federal Voting Rights Act as an example, if you have a situation where you have a minority community, let's say a Black residents, Black voters, and they have not been able to elect their preferred candidate, and you have a high level of racially polarized voting, a situation where the white voters consistently outvote the minority voters and deny them the opportunity to elect their preferred candidates, then you have a situation called racially polarized voting. And where that takes place, then the law basically requires at the federal level that you create a minority district, you draw a district where the minority population is at least 50% plus minority in voting age, or people who are 18 or over. So, going back to the 1980s in New York City, to elect a Black candidate, you often had to create a district that might have been 70 or 80% Black, because you also had you had pockets of white voters that voted along racial lines and would outvote a low voting minority population. So you needed to have high numbers of minority residents to create those districts. The numbers have come down over the years. That generally requires a district to have about 50% or 51%, 52% minority voters in the district. And just to be very clear, when you have a district of 100% population, half of it, over half of it, has to be has to include minority voters, people who are 18 or over, as indicated in the federal census. Now, more recently, we've seen high numbers of Black and Hispanic and Asian candidates being elected. And often now we have white voters who vote for a Black or Hispanic or Asian candidate. So you might need, let's say, 45 or 50% or even lower to elect a minority preferred candidate. But the thing is, you want to, wherever you are, there's no one size fits all, but you want to create a district, depending on the voting patterns there, that will effectively help or allow the minority community to elect their, as we call it, their preferred candidate. The candidate, him or herself, does not need to be of color, but it's the choice of the voters that counts.
Makes a lot of sense. So, how does gerrymandering contribute to the underrepresentation of specific communities, predominantly minority and marginalized group, by diluting their voting power? What are some of the implications of this practice for the political influence and ability of these communities to elect representatives who effectively advocate for their interests?
Well, if you're going to take the minority community, the minority voters, and divide them up and split them into several districts, let's say for political purposes or political gerrymandering, then you're going to deny minority voters the chance to elect their preferred candidate. That is classic gerrymandering. New York State has a new law. It's called the John R. Lewis New York State Voting Rights Act. And that law basically requires that if you have an area, a community with a level of highly racially polarized voting, and you have a minority community or adjacent communities of, let's say, Black and Hispanic voters who have not been able to elect a preferred candidate to office, by office, I mean city council, state legislature, Congress, then under the new state law, you can combine, join together various disparate minority communities and put them together in one district, regardless of whether you reach 50% or more in population, and create a district. So the person who controls the pen in drawing the districts can pretty much help determine, for the most part, the outcome of how an election is likely to turn out. And what you want to make sure of is that minority voters have an opportunity to elect their preferred candidate. And that might be a district with a 45% minority voting age population or a 55% minority voting age population. Each community is different. And also, we've noticed in New York City, in particular, that whereas Black and Asian and Hispanic candidates have won office at the borough level, at the city level, at the local level, especially for city council level districts of about 150,000 people each, you still have local polarized voting. So it's important that you get your numbers, you understand the numbers, the voting patterns, and make sure that the right numbers are applied. This is something that political science has developed an expertise in helping community groups understand and develop the numbers to make these kinds of informed decisions.
Okay, so looking at gerrymandering in New York, what strategies have been proposed to combat it, and how might the implementation of independent redistricting commissions impact the fairness and representation of the political landscape in the state?
Well, as I mentioned, this new state law, the John R. Lewis New York State Voting Rights Act, addresses this in large part by requiring that you look at communities that are like-minded that might not reach 50% under federal standards, but under state law, you can create a district that might only have 30% or 40% of minority voters, and not just Black voters, not just Hispanic voters, but of both races and ethnicities.
Okay, so the latest population estimates from the US Census Bureau from December 2023 indicate that the upcoming redistribution of political power following the 2030 census may bring about some of the most significant changes in the nation's history. Can you, based on your experience, can you discuss the potential implications and some of the significant changes that we can expect?
Well, there are several ways to look at this. Let's go back to 1945. After the 1940 census, New York State had 45 members of Congress. Now it's 2024, and New York only has 26 members of Congress. That's the same number the state had back in the 1820s. So we've gone from 54 members of Congress back down to 26, and the population estimates that the Census Bureau puts out every year indicates that New York has lost so much population since 2020, over 300,000 people, that New York could lose up to three congressional districts. Now, it's much too early to know that for sure. There have always been prognostications that New York will not do well and in a census, and actually the hard count, the decennial numbers that come back show that New York did a lot better, but it's a warning sign that the first thing we have to start doing is to educate people about the census. That's not just a form that's sent out once every 10 years, but it's a doc, it's a set of data that you can work with to make community decisions, to do work on for planning purposes, for schools, for hospitals, for cultural centers, for roads. There's a survey the Census Bureau sends out every year called the American Community Survey, and that collects socioeconomic data that the Census Bureau, uses to make policy decisions and how to spend federal funds. But the significant issue here is that we have to ensure that people understand and appreciate the census, that we don't wait until 2030 or 2029 to tell people about it, that we need to make the census as every day as morning coffee and Rice Krispies. Because if we get a full census count, and it's always difficult to count people in New York, Kings County in particular has a very high undercount because people simply don't respond to the census form. So when we look at the numbers to start with, we have to get the count as high as we can. When you mention New York having a poor record with its past process, New York receiving a D in a recent report for its most recent effort, I'll just remind listeners that in 2014, the state voters approved a constitutional amendment creating what they called an independent redistricting commission. Well, the commission process was designed basically by former Governor Andrew Cuomo and the Republicans in the state Senate majority who were hoping to find a way to hold on to power no matter how the numbers, turned out. The process imploded, it failed. It wasn't until the very end that something finally clicked and that this commission got together to draw up a congressional map to submit to the legislature for approval. But the problem is that New York created a process that has so many flaws in it, so many open-ended situations that couldn't be solved by people agreeing with each other, that we need to really consider a new constitutional amendment and a process before 2030 to make our redistricting process much more transparent, much more equitable, and much more responsive to what voters thought they were voting for in 2014. The commission that we have in place now didn't quite cut that.
Okay, so what do you think should be the next step?
Next step is to take a hard look at what went wrong, what could be done to avoid the problems that we had in the last 2, 3 years, fixing problems like having a odd member to break a tie in a commission, to rank in priority order the criteria that a commission ought to use, to change the requirements on how the commission and the legislature can approve a map, not based on who controls the legislature, but simply allow simple majority votes to determine the outcome of maps and other decisions commissions have to make, not get tied up in log jams that result in implosion.
Okay, so how does gerrymandering compromise the fundamental democratic principle of fair and equal representation? And what are the potential consequences of this distortion on the legitimacy of elections and public trust in the democratic process, particularly when you look at voter turnout and civic engagement?
Well, I'll use the example in New York of how state lines were drawn, 20, redrawn century. Districts were drawn, stretching the rules as far as they could be stretched to create as many rural upstate districts as possible and as few downstate urban districts as possible. This allowed for more Republicans to get elected to the state Senate from upstate New York, and fewer Democrats, and particularly in communities of color, fewer opportunities to elect senators from the downstate area than the upstate area. Now, the reason this happened was that up until the 2020 round, you were allowed to draw districts that were as large as 10% different in population size. Districts cannot exceed more than 10% in the size of the districts. And that allowed the people drawing the lines to overpopulate downstate districts and underpopulate upstate districts. When you underpopulate districts in upstate rural areas, you can create more districts. When you overpopulate districts, you have fewer districts. And we've had from, oh, let's say 1900 or earlier, all the way until 2020, a malapportioned state senate that allowed upstate rural areas to have more representation than downstate New York, which has the predominance of Black, Hispanic, and Asian voters.
Okay, so Mr. Wise, based on your 40 plus years of experience in redistricting, how does gerrymandering influence, reshape, and threaten American democracy?
Well, this, creates a situation where you have again the politicians drawing the line, picking their voters, picking who they want in their districts, making sure that they are reelected. So the maps that were adopted by the legislature pretty much kept most incumbents in office, but did begin making some changes. But again, the legislators themselves were able to take whatever map a commission gave them and make changes to it, so that when the Senate, when the congressional and assembly maps were submitted by a commission to the legislature, they were rejected, but they were fixed by the legislature in the final maps that were approved by helping make sure that some of the incumbents were put back in their districts so they can live in the districts they were going to run in and hope to represent. That's not how things should work ordinarily, that in an American democracy, the voters should pick their elected officials, and that the process by which those districts are drawn needs to be much more independent with much more public participation.
All right. Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you, and we look forward
Okay.
to having you back again. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks very much for having me on.
People power and politics. Hard talk, riveting interviews, community updates, in-depth analysis. That's people power and politics. We tell it to you as it is. No holds barred. You are the people. You have the power. We bring you the politics. To listen to our show, be a guest, or to advertise, visit www.pppradio.nyc. That's www.pppradio.nyc.